Welcome to a very special episode of Fresh Pressed, a podcast by Juicing Systems. Today we have a very special guest, Sunny Gandara. You might recognize her from CiderCon 2023. Sunny is the former global wine director of the Matthew Keeney Restaurant Group and the founder of her own business, the Plant Curious Table. We'll let her introduce herself and give us a little backdrop of her experience, but I'm very excited for this podcast for you guys because Sunny has so much experience, so much great information and tips and guidance that she can give us. So we're going to be doing three scenarios. I thought that was the best way for us to extract all her information, present her with three scenarios of different cideries, and just ask her to brain dump on us, give us everything that she knows, everything she suggests for implementation, marketing, business. I really think you're going to enjoy this podcast. Please watch it to the very end and leave us a comment, like, subscribe, everything. I think this is going to be a worthwhile episode for you to watch. Enjoy. So this podcast is going to be a little bit different. We're going to be really squeezing and pressing all the knowledge out of Sunny here so we can get some nice information, tidbits for our businesses. And we're going to go through three scenarios, three different cider businesses in three different stages of growth. And we will give advice for marketing, business growth, all that kind of stuff. All three scenarios will be cider makers with their own orchard. First stage would be a startup. You know, low marketing marketing funds, zero, no cider product yet. Maybe they're still working on it. The second scenario would be a cider maker with his product already figured out, already out in the market, maybe a couple of years operating, and maybe they have a small marketing budget. They've already started thinking this amount of funds for marketing. And then the third scenario will be a large cider producer with multiple years experience and maybe a large marketing budget. Maybe they already have one or two people in their marketing department specializing in that. And I think if we do three scenarios, it could be helpful for those people that are in and around those stages to be advised directly to them. What do you think, Sam?
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
So before we get started, Sunny, can you give us a little bit of your backstory, your experience, and what you've been working
on? Yeah, for sure. Very quickly, I'm originally from Norway. I moved to the US to go to college. I went to New York first in 1995, and that's when I started. I actually have a background as a record label executive in the music industry, and I did international marketing for very big brands, big celebrities. And then after 10 years, I reschooled myself. I went to culinary school. I also started studying wine, and since 2005, pretty much, or four, I've been in the food and wine industry in New York. I have had different roles, everything from wine buyer in retail. I recently worked for Quercia Bella, which is a very well-known small Tuscan winery in Chianti Classico. I was their U.S. marketing director there. I've also worked as a wine buyer for Matthew Keeney Cuisine, which is a global plant-based restaurant group. And then also have worked for importers, distributors, you know, doing sales. My passion is marketing, actually now branding. And I started last year my own company called the Plant Curious Table, which is a digital content creation company that specializes in the plant-based food scene, but also wine consulting, spirit consulting, and hopefully cider soon. and definitely a very much focus on digital creation, like courses, classes, education, and also consulting for companies who are looking to expand either into the U.S. market or getting into the U.S. market from here. So that's very, very short. But again, I've been doing this for nearly 20 years, dating myself now. So, but it's great to just be working on my own and having sort of the freedom to do my own thing and just work on projects that are passion projects that I really love. So yeah, I'm really happy to be here and talk about cider.
I was super excited because, like you said, you've been working in so many industries. I'm like, just picking Sunny's brain for the viewers would be incredible. But let's go right into it. I don't want to waste people's time. Scenario one, which was a cidery that maybe hasn't had their product out yet. Very, very little to zero marketing budget. Maybe it's just a couple, maybe it's just people, you know, you have your own time. What are the most important must-haves at this stage, Sunny, for growth, marketing, or even just business advice, so they can start right in the right direction?
Sure. So this is the stage that I specialize in and love doing, but it's also a stage that I think everyone can come back to and connect with, even if you are an established brand, to sort of renew and revitalize your strategy. So as you said, you have an idea in this stage. You may have a product. You may have decided to start a business. You may even have a few customers or leads, or maybe you're hand delivering a couple of bottles here and there. You might even be in talks with a distributor. But some questions to ask yourself before all of this in this stage would be, can we get enough customers, right? Can we deliver our products? Can we provide services well enough to become a viable business? Can we expand from that sort of pilot production process, if you will, to a much broader sales base? And then also very important, do we have enough money to cover the sort of considerable cash demands of this startup phase, right? So I think many people just start out with a dream of, oh, I just want to make delicious cider or insert wine or beer, but then they don't take into account that 80% of your job will actually be marketing and selling that product. And it's important to educate yourself in this area and treat it like that's just as important, right? And that starts with a strong foundation. And this is what I'm really very, this is just something I want to highlight. It's starting with a strong story. And be aware of how you present your brand. Like, why are you in business? Like, what are you trying to achieve? What was your inspiration? Like, have a strong goal and then work backward from there. I mean, you can have all the strategies and marketing expertise in the world and be part of as many organizations as you want, but if you're not clear on who you are as a brand, you won't succeed, and you'll disappear in a sea of other brands that may have a stronger foundation. So that's why storytelling is so important in this stage, and in every stage for that matter, but especially as foundation. And I always say facts tell, stories sell. And this is a mistake I see many times done in the wine industry, where they focus on the wrong thing. Like, they go on and on about soil types and whole bunch fermentation, all these technical wine terms that I, as a wine nerd, of course, appreciate, but most people don't care. They want personal stories. So that's why telling your story will really capture the attention. And secondly, identifying your ideal customer. And this can be, you know, it can be a lengthy process and one that can continue into both scenario 2 and 3 or stages 2 and 3, as you know, you and your customers might change, you know, and your target market might change. But I'd say to start just focusing on one, not trying to sell to too many groups. As they say, when you're speaking to everyone, you're speaking to no one. And many make that mistake and put out the bland message like, hey, we're for everyone. But that doesn't really evoke a very strong emotion in anybody, because they don't feel that you're speaking to them personally. So although it can be very scary to niche down, especially in the beginning, I think that your chance of success will be much higher if you dare to do so. So just make sure that your messaging is attention grabbing and different from other competitors. And also make sure to communicate, this is something that goes for all industries, but like communicating the transformation the customer will go through by choosing and consuming your cider. Like, what will they go out, what will they get out of buying and drinking your product? I think it's very important to focus on the transformation the customer will experience and not getting too lost in the features of your product. Of course, this can change as, you know, who you're talking to. If you're talking to a buyer, they want to know that, but I'm talking about customers in general. This is really where you start to build a brand. You know, as an example, you're not going to hear Apple, right, detailing all the bytes and bits and fast processor, I don't even know, but all the geeky inside details of the machines, right? They're grabbing attention with their Think Different slogan. They focus on the UVP, right? The unique value proposition, and make consumers want to be a part of this cool group, this Apple product customers. And I think we can learn a lot from that in the alcohol beverage industry. And then when we have no marketing budget, or you're trying to think like, how can I, you know, get seen. I would say if you friend or team up with a mixologist, for instance, get them to fall in love with your brand and pay attention to them, maybe bring it into their bar, tell the story. Starting small like this, just having one person as sort of your cheerleader can be very powerful. So starting small and not expanding or focusing on expanding and being everywhere too quickly. You can obviously start with private parties, partner with groups and organizations in your area that you think might enjoy cider, or have the interest and the budget to purchase your product. Private clubs could be a good one. Farmers markets, I've seen ciders hang out there and sell their products. It can be a very low cost entry into, you'll obviously have to have, you know, the paperwork in place to do that. But I think that's really where you get to sort of have that close connection with customers. And then, you know, team up with wine, food and lifestyle influencers. Not all influencers charge like 100K or, and if you find someone that really resonate with you, again, same with the mixologist, getting someone to sort of help you spread the message. And this is where you're, you know, building your grassroots following, right? You'll have a chance to talk to people, understand their taste, what they like, what they're looking for. You can educate them, tell them about your cider and your brand. And this is really, you know, the most time consuming phase, right? But it's also a really rewarding stage where you'll get feedback and validation of your concept. And again, people in stage 2 and 3 should also do this continuously. They shouldn't lose track of that. Like for instance, with my Arctic Grub brand that I have, where I produce digital content in the food and wine space, I specialize in something very niche-y, like plant-based Nordic food. And I do cooking classes and workshops online, and then Scandinavian clubs will have seen the online courses and they contact me, and I do in-person cooking classes around the tri-state area. I've even been invited to speak in Wisconsin at a national fair there. And so really getting involved in your community and industry, I think is really important in this stage.
I want to hit a couple points that you said. One that comes to mind is getting your product, jumping when you think I'm right or wrong and give some context. I think the best strategy in this stage could be giving away a lot of your product, like a lot of tasting, you know, like you said, maybe send it to influencers. They put maybe not spend too much money on Instagram ads or big ads. I think giving your product away so people try it, right? Because nobody knows you. And at the end of the day, something edible, you want to try it, right? I think there's a friction between a new product and a person purchasing. It's like, ooh, what if it's disgusting? What if I spend X amount of money and I hate it? It's like you're fighting yourself on an investment, right? Micro investment, but it's still. But if they try for free and they, I don't know, if it's not cider, like hard cider, it could be some sort of like apple juice or anything, clubs, you know, like workout clubs or anything where they can try it and they taste it. And it's, okay, you know what? I'll buy it and I won't have to risk trying something I don't like and spending my money. So I think I'll give a shout out to Revita from Alberta. They told me that they spent, I don't know, they gave away maybe 30 to 40,000, you know, individual products of their energy drink and in the first year. Like, that's huge. Who gives about 30,000 of the product for free? It worked, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have to, obviously everyone's different. I don't know what their budget, marketing budget is at that point. And, you know, it's still, you have to, I mean, people have to taste your product. So spending money on, like you said, Instagram or Facebook ads is like throwing money out the window because nobody is going to buy something they don't know, right? But also it comes down to that strong foundation I talked about. Like, who are your ideal customers? So when you're sending out samples, be discerning to who you send samples to that are actually going to make sense, right? So this is a way you can sort of be a little bit, not that you're being stingy, but you're being very methodical and you know, conscious around your choice of who's going to taste, right? But I think that you never know who's going to fall in love with your product. So there's never anything wrong with, and you have to do that. And this is probably going to be your biggest expense is really giving away products so people have a chance to taste. Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have any tips on, I don't know, maybe accepting to yourself that you have to niche down and maybe have one little tiny, I know how hard it is thinking like, well, I could get somebody from here, from that, I can sell it to everybody. I'm giving away money. Like, I'm leaving money on the table. If I focus on one person, it's very hard for a new entrepreneur to accept that. Accept that you you just really talk to the most narrow audience you can, like you're saying. Any tips to get there psychologically accepted?
Well, I mean, look at someone, I was going to bring this up later, but I just was thinking of my own industry, the wine industry, someone who's actually niched down and become incredibly successful, and something that maybe people thought was not going to work is the wine 19 crimes. So first of all, Australian wine, right? Oh my God, like Australian wine is so out. Nobody wants those, like, you know, the, remember how the funny like animals with all kinds of colors on the labels and screw cap. Oh my God, not romantic, right? And then they have a male criminal, you know, convicted criminal, not exactly like an attractive branding. I'm not talking about Snoop. I did work with Snoop. I did his international publicity for many years. So no, not Snoop, but I'm talking about the general, you know, branding that they have. And the reason was, this wasn't just random, okay? They've done a lot of research, a lot of customer, you know, talking to customers. They are targeting millennial males who are sort of identifying with that sort of rough, like, rogue, like sort of mischievous type, right? And they selling like crazy. So, you know, I would say if you're scared of doing that, ask yourself, well, what is my ideal market? Like, who would I be super excited to have my, you know, to have them taste my product and be customers? And then also, who can I identify with most and maybe can identify with me or us as a brand? Because it's really an emotional purchase, right? Like, nobody needs your product for survival. So you have to find something that you can have that sort of very, I would say, natural connection with. And you have to go through that stage one and identify everything before you just say, I just want to sell my cider. I just want to make money. Because I understand there's a lot of finances involved, a lot of you know, budget concerns, and maybe people are just like putting their life savings into this, and it gets really, really scary. But again, like I said, when you're trying to hit everybody, nobody identifies with you, and nobody's going to buy your product. So it's really, you said, it's very tough, but it is the most successful strategy, I think. It's been just proven, you know?
This stage, they're trying to expand reach. You think going towards online sales would be a good option, or more focusing on their local market, local area where they reside?
Well, initially you want to obviously focus on local, but I don't think it's an either or scenario. In my opinion, of course, being present in your local market, I think, is very important. But for cider especially, I say you'd be missing out if you're not online, as more and more people do go to that outlet to purchase. And, you know, I know that especially for younger, the younger market, I know that cider has captured a lot of the millennials and those 20, 30s, 40s, even, or 30s. But e-commerce for alcohol is rapidly growing, as you probably, we all know who's listening. And I read somewhere that online shoppers went from 19% in 2019 to 44% in 2020, which I know COVID probably had something to do with that, but it's still projected to increase threefold until 2025. So yes, you would be totally missing out if you didn't do it. But also, you have to identify, like, what resources do you have in place to make that happen? Because, you know, obviously it'll require another person or more labor, investment, money, and in whatever technology and expertise in online marketing and things like that. But overall, I think when you're doing online sales, you can also more easily control the customer experience. When you engage in direct to consumer sales, you have more access to customers, which I think is really powerful. And of course, you have to take into consideration there are lots of strict regulations of e-commerce in many states, and involving shipping and taxes and so forth. So there's naturally, you know, some barriers to entry as well. But I see many cideries having their own cider clubs, which I think is great, you know, where you can purchase online. I think that's a really great way to strengthen that customer experience and your brand and their experience of you. So I think clubs, if you can do it also, is great.
I think we could move on to the second scenario in between, where maybe you already have a couple years in the market, you have some marketing money. Yeah, like that'd be in between from being a startup to being a fully, you know, 10 years in the market veteran company. Is there any must-haves or that you should spend your marketing money on, or you should spend your business growth investments towards, or industries that you should be joining to help you get you to that third stage?
So yeah, in this stage, you probably have started to get into a good number of stores. Your team is slowly growing. You have a few people out in the field. Your fan base is starting to grow, which is exciting. And at this stage, you should have, if not already, established your core values. You've started to develop your company culture, your brand identity. You're getting more into developing that client experience, and you've created that initial business model. Some mistakes I see both in phase one and two, but maybe even phase two more, is that you're hiring too many salespeople too soon. And just because you have more salespeople doesn't necessarily mean more sales. So your company, you have to be ready for it. So make sure, and this is vital, that you can sell your product first. And that's based on that strong foundation that I mentioned in stage one. And then you want to work backward from your goal. You know, start with like, how much revenue do you need to generate to continue growing? Identify the number of sales you need to get there, and consider, how many tastings do I need to do? How many calls on accounts do I, and emails will it take to achieve my goal, my revenue goals, right? And are those goals achievable with your current headcount? It might be time to hire, but this is how you find out. Just want to make sure, as with every stage, that everyone on your team is really committed, is a good fit, and also pulling their weight. So you don't want to just hire another salesperson because one isn't doing enough. You know, you just have to be able to, like, it becomes critical not to expand too quickly, as I said, but really to identify your goals again and where you'd like to take the company. So for instance, I worked for a wine importer some years ago, and they were really clear on who they wanted on their team because it was a very specialized Italian portfolio. And so they were really picky with their choices and who they thought would be a good fit. And I worked the entire Hudson Valley region in New York, which is huge. And I also had some key accounts in Manhattan where I had some personal contacts. But I sometimes found myself thinking like, wow, this is a lot of territory and a lot of driving. But for some reason, sales came easy to me at the accounts I visited and I spent time on, because I knew what I was talking about. I was really passionate about the wines and the region. And I suppose the rate of return for me was greater because of that. And, you know, the company could have easily hired someone else, like up north, just to cover something. But, you know, they were just they took their time finding, not to say that I'm so perfect and I knew everything, but, you know, it was just like the right fit. And I was like, wow, they really identified someone who's passionate and can do it. So that becomes probably one of the most challenging things in any stage, is hiring and managing people and creating that nice company culture. But it really, that's definitely one of the key things you should just be very aware of in this stage, is the rate of how fast you're expanding, and also the kind of people you have on your team. And is this the right fit? Do we continue, or do we sort of go backwards and reassess?
Because you're starting to see money in your account now, right? So
yeah,
it might be easier to view, oh, there's a problem, let's hire somebody. Because, well, why not, right? You have the money, maybe it'll help you grow. Like, you're at the stage, like you said, you're at multiple places that are distributing, a lot of places are selling your product. Is it time to try to get to the big stores, you know, Walmart, Costco? I'm sure people are thinking it, right? They're thinking like, well, how many units are going to order from the bat? Like, what are the pros and cons, and should you do this? I already see you shaking your head, so go ahead.
Well, I think nothing against Walmart and Costco, but, you know, I would say trying to think, reach that level, and even any level, considering that, would be a recipe for disaster in many ways. Because, of course, in order to get into these types of stores, you have to have the ability to produce enough. So are you producing enough? Are you going to be sure that you're going to meet their demands, and also have enough resources, right? So if you walk into these stores, though, and I'm talking about, I'm not an expert on the cider industry, but I think I know everyone from the small to the large, I can kind of envision. But when you go into these stores, how many brands do you see on the shelves that are not owned by larger corporations or companies? Not many, right? So obviously getting into these stores is very difficult. This shelf space is extremely limited, and the cost for you to produce compared to these larger brands will be much higher. How can you be competitive? And just because you're in these stores doesn't mean you're gonna sell. So you have to have that marketing budget. You have to have these resources to compete with that size. But fundamentally, instead of chasing that, I really think you should ask yourself, like, what kind of brand do we want to be? You know, do we want to cater to a mass market? Is that the type of, and there's nothing, again, wrong with it. There's a place for every product. But do you want to be more of an upscale, any independent brand, like looked upon as like, you know, which I think is really very, well, when I went to the cider conference, you know, in Chicago a couple of months ago, like that's that kind of your MO. It's like that sort of craftsmanship and small, and not to say that, you know, you can't be big and still have, you know, a good quality product, but you just have to ask yourself, like, is that in line with my brand, you know? And it can be very, very tempting because of course, like, oh yeah, it's guaranteed I'll sell X amount when I'm in Costco, but it's not. And you only have a certain amount of time to prove that you can actually, and then you'll spend a lot of money getting in there. So be very careful with that. I'm not saying yes or no, but at stage two, I wouldn't recommend that you focus on that.
Are they little tidbits that you know because you've gone through it with other products, getting into big retailers, that not to scare people off, but they should be aware that with these, with great power comes great responsibility, right, type of thing. Little things that are you're not expecting that are going to cost you money, time, and investment.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like production, you know, like you have to produce enough. If you can't meet their demands, they're going to kick you out, be like, you know, all of a sudden, overnight, maybe you, you know, God bless you if that happens, right? If you have like, I need 10,000 units, and then you're not prepared. I think that's the scariest scenario. And then you can't meet their demand. I'm like, and then the next one, there's lots of people in line behind you wanting to get in there. And with different branding ideas or different scenarios, right? So I think that I don't have any specific examples to give, but certainly I've had some scary horror stories from the past that, you know, it's just a different animal. And I think you need people who are specialists in that field to handle that for you. Don't go in there thinking that now I know what to do, because they have a very different way of doing business.
I think a lot at the same time in this stage, sometimes you know that you're growing steadily and you know that you could grow a lot faster. I mean, you can reach economy of scale, maybe new equipment, new everything, but you need capital. But you're not making enough sales for that capital to make that big jump in equipment or production, a new facility. So you're stuck in like, well, I need more money. I'm selling. Do I just wait and save? Or do I find some sort of investor or loan or something to jump to that scale that get there faster? So it's, how do we get capital in this stage? Are investors or banks looking for something specific? Can you shine a light into that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't have a crystal ball telling you who would be willing to invest at this stage, but that'll vary as all investors are different. And many are skeptical to invest in alcoholic beverages for various reasons, you know, strict regulated rules and can't apply it to everyone. And there is some sort of like risk around that. But having worked for investors, I can give you some tips for what they would be looking for and how you can prepare in order to sort of attract someone, right? First of all, obviously you need a quality, great tasting product. And that's still only a small, but very important portion of the recipe for success. But if you're committed to making the best quality product in your category, if that's your sort of MO, you can make a real impact. So, you know, investors are really looking for integrity. And again, that strong story, right? That's something that's passionate and stands out. Why did you create your cidery or your cider? Why should it exist? Does it have a place? Why should it have a place in the market? What's your vision for the company? And you have to back this up. You can't just tell a fairy tale story and a feel good story, right? I mean, all forecasts should be based on factual data-based assumptions. Investors know, believe me, how long it takes, how much money it'll cost. So as a startup, you're just not going to fool anyone with unrealistic numbers. And that, if you give them that, it shows a real lack of integrity, and that'll be something. So just make sure you need to show commitment also that you're in it for the long haul. And if you're a cidery listening or working in the cider business, you know it takes a lot of work, right? It's a lot of hard work. And investors, they just need to see your willingness to work hard and stick with it. So investing, of course, is a numbers game, right? I mean, many investors want to see a 40% profit margin or sometimes even higher, depending on what kind of beverage it is. But if you're not there yet, you should at least have a vision that includes that sort of clear line of sight for how you'll achieve that. And as for velocity, it goes back to what I was saying before. It's best to keep your focus very, very narrow and deep in your niche rather than to create those good velocities rather than wide and shallow, right? Trying to appeal to everyone, as we talked about before. So again, they don't want to see something that just is like whatever. They want to see, wow, this is like really, this is interesting niche, right? And know your numbers. Oh my God, there are so many wineries, and I can't talk about ciders because I don't have enough experience, but so I just keep bringing that, winemakers that just don't know that side. You know, they know how to make amazing wine, but they just don't know their numbers. You have to know them in your business inside out. Be prepared for any detailed questions. I mean, you can watch like Cheese Ball, but like watch Shark Tank, right? Just to get an idea. And investors, you know, they like trends, but they don't like those flash in the pan fads, like, you know, what's, you know, just hot for 2 minutes, you know, so don't bank on that being sort of an attractive idea for them. And another thing is like showing that you're coachable and curious and you want to learn is attractive, and that you're not just a know-it-all. I know it all. Well, why are you here? You know? And lastly, of course, you want to make sure that your presentation is on point. You have a solid business plan that's detailed, well thought out, along with that sort of comprehensive go-to-market strategy. And if you're not sure where to start, you can look to other companies to get examples of really impactful investor presentations that are available anywhere. And this is something I help my clients with in my consulting business, actually. And then also be prepared. You know, you have to give up equity. Are you willing to do that? You know, so there's pluses and minuses of both. But for sure, if you could get an investor on board, you know, and you feel that's the right thing, these are the points I would definitely have in place.
How about we move on to stage three, where you're always walking with Sunny. You already hired Sunny, you're working, you have money to invest in new markets, expand, you know, you can do big moves now. Are there things that markets we should be getting into, specific stuff that we should be watching out for this third stage?
Yeah, so this is the stage where you already have a sizable market share, perhaps you're widely available, hopefully. You're now sort of fine tuning those systems and procedures and focusing on scaling your business. And this is also a stage where you might hit a plateau, thinking like, how do we grow from here? No pun intended, right? but it's always possible to scale. So then ask yourself, like, when was the last time your company focused on innovation? Like, when did you go through and assess what type of barriers you're experiencing in getting together with your team to find solutions, you know, how to bust through them? How do we think new? And how do we, as with both in business and life, if you're not growing, you're dying. I'm sure you've heard of that. But so in this phase, the priority has to lie in finding ways to keep growing, keep innovating, and networking, as in all stages, becomes more important as you realize that, you know, no man's an island. You can only grow so big before you need to start looking outwards and collaborating with others. So as you were saying, attending business networking functions, joining industry-related groups for continuing education, professional connections outside, get some guidance from people that you admire or look up to, even the people who think, oh, that he's not going to talk to me or she's not going to talk to me. They don't have to be in your industry. But in fact, it's better if they're not, because they'll be able to bring in that fresh outside perspective to your business, right? So I think that, you know, the difficulties about growth in this stage is, it's important, first of all, to distinguish between growth and scaling. So for those of you who don't know, at this stage, a company should try to scale, meaning they're growing faster than their expenses. When you're in your growth phase, like phase two, for instance, you're expanding your team, your product line, and the expenses are large, often much larger. They grow faster than your expenses are adding on faster than your growth. So you grow in size, not in revenue. And that's, of course, not sustainable, right? Especially if you're experiencing a dip in sales, which often we do. So when you're scaling, you're able to handle an increase in sales, work, or output in a more sort of cost-effective, reasonable manner. And you can handle that growth without suffering in other areas, such as employee turnover, or, you know, a product can't be produced fast enough to meet demand, things like that, while your profit margins are slowly increasing over time. So that's what you're looking for. So again, this stage is also very important. Remember, why did you start your cidery? It might be time to, you know, reassess, like fill a need. Do you want to fill a need? Do you want to make profits? Obviously, but you probably started it because you wanted to fulfill a dream you had. So you need to reconnect with these reasons. In other words, know and remember your why, know your purpose. Because if you don't, scaling will really be of limited use. So here it's about creating and maintaining that true customer loyalty and And if you focus on employee loyalty, that's the best way to create customer loyalty, right? Because when your employees are happy, they'll spread the word, they'll be enthusiastic for your company, pass that on to others, and they get, and you need to focus on that, because employees are loyal when their purpose and their value align with your company's values, right? And they feel that their careers have a higher purpose. It's not just a job. So that's really, really important. It's very easy to lose sight of that as you're sort of trying to meet demand and you're growing so fast. And of course, it's also about perfecting your product and your service. So if all you do is, again, focusing on this massive growth, many business owners neglect that you have to still keep providing excellent quality and a great product. You want to make sure that your internal processes and operations are seamless. Maybe you need to adjust some of them now that you're in stage three. You more than likely, you'll probably need to tweak them. And this is where it's very important to become, to be flexible and show a willingness to adapt. Because scenarios come up and you're like, oh, wow, I couldn't foresee this. You have to have that personality like, okay, well, let's... Don't be so like stubborn and narrow-minded that you're like, no, but this is the way we do it. You have to be flexible at this stage because a lot of things can happen. So again, that strong team, know when to delegate. Ask yourself, what are you doing as a business owner, for instance, that someone else can handle so that you can free up your time to work on the bigger picture of continuing to scale, continuing to develop relationships and collaborations and focus on the direction of the company. Maybe create new products that are in line with your values and brands. So that's probably the top three things I would say to focus on in this stage.
I've heard this a lot, and I've heard you have too, saying that if you want to expand your market, you want to start taking market share from, you know, either you're from the beer market or from the wine market. Does that make sense? Tell me what you think about that. Like if you're making a cider, you know, towards beer drinkers and you want to take their market share, or a fancy cider going towards wine drinkers, and that's how you think of it.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. And I think there's a lot of similarities between cider and wine, maybe not so much between like, and many people say like beer and cider is similar, but you know, taking cider just to sort of how these wine markets differ, right? So cider, I think, has yet to achieve that mainstream accessibility of wine or that cultural influence of beer, right? I think it's only, 2% of the U.S. alcoholic beverage production. So I think that, you know, trying to become like wine is a mistake. But of course, you want to learn from a market that's bigger and somewhat similar in style. But I would rather focus on what makes you different. Assess the need in the market. Like, do they want another wine, or do they, you know, trying to steal market share? Of course, that's also always going to happen and be part of someone's strategy. But I would focus on yourself, not to be ignorant of what's going on around you, but really just focus on what makes you stand out. What are your advantages? What makes cider a more attractive beverage in many ways? And also, oh, because you like wine, look at this. And you don't always have to ride on the coattail of wine, right? Because that's when you're really losing your identity. But you can always draw similarities so people, you know, pay attention like, oh. And then you have your chance to sort of dig in. It's not like we shouldn't look to other industries to see what's going on. We absolutely should. But I think we just have to be careful not to become copycats and just remember what makes cider so special. You know, own it, you know. It's sometimes when you're trying to be like someone else, it's kind of like fear induced. And customers are not stupid. They can smell it out. So you just want to make sure that you ask yourself, how can I make my brand unique while still taking lessons from others? Yeah, I don't know if that answered your question, but
so more like stop thinking of how to replace wine in somebody's purchase, or just compliment that, and maybe they want to experience.
Introduce them to something new. I mean, consumers love like discovering something new, right? Because it's like, if you have someone who's really loyal to wine or a certain brand, they're not going to exchange that for your cider, I don't think. But you can add in, kind of like what I do in my approach to my plant curious table. And I spoke to that also. I speak to the plant curious. I'm not asking you to replace your meat, But I'm asking you to also try Beyond Meat and see if you want to eat a little bit less meat, you know, and then saying like, I drink a cider if you want a little less alcohol, if you want a different flavor, a different occasion. I don't think that, I think that if it's like you're trying to steal market share, it comes from a lack mentality. Like there's only so much for each one of us versus like, no, there's room for any good product, whether it's cider, wine, beer. If you're a fantastic product, you have a great marketing strategy and a passionate, yeah, you're going to be successful. And you don't give up, by the way, because you never fail unless you give up. So like, I really just think that rethinking that sort of fear-based strategy would do you good. Just own your brand. Just say like, I have the best product, I have the best cider, and it'll be contagious. I'm convinced of it.
I think we can, unless you want to add anything else to this stage, we can move on and start wrapping it up.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
What's something simple? Because I think we talked about a lot of stuff and it could be overwhelming for somebody. What is something simple that anybody at any stage should start doing right now that would help them in their marketing or in their business?
I mean, we touched on it before, but I can't emphasize this enough. Go out and talk to people. Let them taste your cider, experience it, you know, personally. Ask them what they like. Get to know your customer, because, you know, validate and test out your product to see if it's a viable idea and if there's a market for it. Staying in touch with the consumer is so important, and it has to be front and center, no matter what stage you're in, right? And as soon as you lose sight of trends and what the market wants, you'll be left behind by someone who's prioritizing it. So really staying on that. Remember, the customers are the reason you're in business, but also be part of that process. Like, let them get to know you and your cider, why they should be buying and drinking your product. Tell your story and share that enthusiasm of yours when you're passionate. I mean, it's really contagious. So just because you're on top of trends doesn't mean you should stray from your why or why you want to be in business. It just means that you can leverage what you have to offer and find ways to connect with the right consumer. And so many times we forget those simple things. So I think that was great that you asked that question, because we do tend to complicate it in our minds. But at the end of the day, they just want to know, well, first of all, they want to taste your product, but they want to know who's behind it. And the more personal you can be, the more you can share and the more you can be passionate and show that enthusiasm. I think that's when it's going to, might take a little while, but I think that's when your authenticity comes out and where you can have a stronghold, a strong foot, a strong beginning.
And I want to throw in a little tip that I was thinking about, because it's like, oh, a marketing strategy and maybe a videographer or a graphic designer, like it could be a lot. And like, what kind of, do I have to write scripts and to post on social media because I'm making content? It's like, I think just like Gary Vee has said, is documenting your journey. And if you're already truly passionate and you're being authentic, you just document your journey. And what does that mean? Maybe taping yourself working in the field, maybe taping yourself doing the first tasting and like, oh man, this was crap. We have to go back to the drawing board, more recipes. Just documenting that and putting that in the public, even though scary because it's vulnerable, it's moments that you're like, they're not polished. I think just doing that with your phone doesn't matter.
That's excellent advice. People love behind the scenes stuff, you know, and it shows your true self. Like you're perfect. No one's perfect. Nobody wants to see a perfectly coiffed person all the time. You know, it's like none of us are. So I think that is very good advice, and just show the good, bad, and the ugly, you know, like it's part of the process. So yeah, that's excellent.
Any books, podcasts, any businesses that we should be studying or looking at to learn better or learn more? What do you think, Sonia? What do you do?
I mean, for marketing purposes and, you know, just to kind of get out of the beverage world, because I'm not really a fan of, you know, reading marketing books on wine or anything like that, because that also becomes really outdated. So I would say something, I love Seth Godin. I don't know if you have read his books. He has a lot of books on marketing. Some of his my favorite books are This Is Marketing, which I think is one of his latest ones. He has one called Tribes, another one called Purple Cow. There are a few of my favorites. And then The E-Myth. I know that's an oldie, but it's a really good one, where it's the myth that businesses are started by entrepreneurs when in fact they are started by technicians. So like, say, plumbers start plumbing companies and, you know, but then they don't have the mindset of an entrepreneur. And that is so important. What we were talking about, it's two different things. Just because you know how to make something doesn't mean you know how to run a business, but you can learn it, but you just have to have both in place. And I think that's a really valuable book to read. I think that getting it right is like, you know, just that mind shift change from technician to entrepreneur, right? And that's part of creating a business that exists apart from you, so you can actually step out of it and not just constantly be in it. Because I think that's a lot of winery owners and cidery owners probably struggle with. It's like they have to be present all the time to do the job when somebody else could be doing it. But you have to know how to put those systems in place. So I highly recommend the E-Myth. And then, you know, podcasts. I do like a wine podcast called I'll Drink to That with Levi Dalton. If you are a wine lover or want to know, he interviews some wine personalities and has some wine behind the scenes content. There's also one called How I Built This with Guy Raz, which stories some of the best known companies. And then there's another one called a podcast called Entrepreneurs on Fire with John Dumas. And that's more on the mindset of what it takes to succeed. And, you know, if you ever want to go in, you know, feeling down or you need some inspiration, I think that's also a really fun, interesting podcast. There's so many, I could go on and on, but definitely it's important to work your mindset. And so even if it's just 10 minutes a day where you listen to something inspirational, go to YouTube, watch a clip on something, just do some, I don't know, whatever you're into, mindset, meditation, visualization. It does wonders. I just, you know, sort of jumped off that for a while. I just got into my business so much and I noticed I started to slip and I was like, ugh, I was feeling awful. It's kind of like going away from the gym if you've been really fit. You have to do it for your mind. And especially as a business owner, it's really important. Surround yourself with people who are positive. Listen to these inspirational like podcasts and learn. Keep learning, because we all could use more learning. And we never, I'm a forever student. I always learn something every day. So I think those are really, it's an important thing to do in your daily life.
I think you missed one very important podcast though, Fresh Press by Juicy Systems.
Of course. Oh my, but that's a given. You're already listening to it, so you know.
Yeah, yeah. On board.
Adding that to my list. Yes, for sure. Adding that to my playlist.
Any final thoughts, Sunny? Where can we find you? What are you doing? Where can we go follow you so we can stay in touch with you?
Yeah, sure. You can check out my website, sunnygandara.com, under Work With Me, if you are interested in working with me either on consultations or recipe development. If you have a cidery, you want to create a nice plant-based standout and create some different recipes. Also arcticgrub.com if you're interested in Nordic culture, food. On social media, I'm on Sunny Gandara and also Decant with Plants and the Plant Curious Table. I have a kind of ADHD. I have a million different handles, but Sunny Gandara, you can find me pretty much and through my other accounts there. So yeah.
I hope that all this information will help a couple people, and thank you, Sunny, for taking the time and brain dumping on us.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me on. I had fun.
Thank you, Sunny.
All right, Alex. I'll talk to you soon.
You will. Have a good day. Bye.
Bye-bye. You too. Bye.